Peace. My name is Dylan Cinemasai Green, and welcome to the Real Notes Podcast. I speak with rappers, producers, journalists, and other hip-hop adjacent figures about their relationship with movies, and if at all, film inspires their craft. My guest this week is Bronx rapper Hester Valentine. We spoke about the current state of music media and streaming, Donnie Darko, Opus, Mulholland Drive, how David Lynch and Danny Brown have influenced his music, pursuing rap in his 20s, defining his style, bringing clarity to abrasive production, and the creative process behind projects like I Can't Cut Your Hair, Valenta, and his latest, Hunan Slurp, Your Vegetables Eat You. Come fuck with us.
When do your like work days like start?
It depends on what I got going on. Usually I try to start no later than like 9:30, 10 o'clock, but it depends on how much I have to do. Like tomorrow, I don't really got shit going on. So like I have like a meeting at 4, but I did everything I need to do for like the next couple days. So I can like,
fire.
I'm sleeping in like a motherfucker tomorrow.
I love that. That is I'm like, awesome.
What about you? Your day usually starts around like 9-ish.
Yeah, like regular 9 to 5. Like I'm like, that's what I was asking you, because like I feel like it's like way harder to like make your own schedule. Like I'm like, mm-hmm. I feel like kind of fortunate that like I have like a thing that I have to like, I have to show up at this time. Like I can't clock in like earlier than 8:53. Like it's like,
right,
it's wow, like, okay. It's like, I'm like, whoo, parameters, you know? Like, but I saw the piece for the clipping Playboy Cardi thing. Like
I don't know if you got to read it, but
no, of course you. I was at my desk reading that shit. Yo, nah, that shit was man. Good. Like, and I thought it was, because I would have never thought to compare the two. And like, and I thought like the, it is interesting, like, because, like, it made, like, it was one of those connections that, like, as you were, like, laying it out, I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's, like, clearly there. Like, that's, like, a total, like, thing that they, like, even, like, that's been, like, Clipping's, like, MO, like, since the beginning, I feel like, just, like, repurposing, like, older, like, hip-hop sounds, like, Bay Area shit, and, like, tropey stuff and whatever, and, like, recontextualizing it and, like, kind of making, like, something new. That's why I like the Splendor and Misery shit, because, like, it was like a story context where it was like it actually like really really made sense to like approach it that way, and it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is super ill, like, you know, like, but
yeah, bro, but yeah, thank you, son. Yeah, no, like I was, cause like I listened to the Cardi album, I liked it, but I was like, I don't want to just do a review. I want to like write something a little, like I want to go a little like off grid a bit. And then I listened to the Clipping album, and I'm like, oh, of course, like they're doing this again. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Like Swamp Izzo's all over this. There's like references to Wayne and Jeezy. I'm like, yeah, nah. Like this is, they're working from the same playbook, but in like different contexts. And I was like, there's the angle. And I was like, yeah, this is it.
Nah, that's, like, it was, that's fire.
It just cracked, and I was like, cool. Like we're doing this instead.
And the 454 one, and the 454 Sifu one is another one of those. Like I really like when you do the like intersect, like the like cross comparison thing, like, because for those records, like again, those are two records I wouldn't have immediately like thought to compare, but then when once you start like laying it out, I'm like, oh yeah, it is like an interesting like approach that they kind of share similarities into like how they like create records, or at least these particular right. records. Like,
yeah, no, definitely, but like at least with the two of them, they've like worked together, so there's like a bit more of a precedent,
true, yeah, yeah.
To do it, but like but you know, like once again, I was just like, these are like long ass albums that are like statement pieces about them, and like it's, I don't know, it just made sense. And yeah, like I love that type of, like, that's why Real Notes exists. I just love everything interdisciplinary. I love comparing everything to everything and making those connections. I don't know, it just makes you appreciate the music more, or at yeah. least or even if you don't like it, like at least it'll like flex that muscle of like, how are these two things the same, or how do they approach this one different thing from two different angles? I don't know. That's just cool as hell to me.
Like, I remember I had a friend I was like talking to, and like we were talking about like liking different genres of music, and like something they pointed out to me was like, to do that kind of like requires you to like what's the word I'm looking for? Like see like the connection and things that like are different, like appear different, like, and like And once you kind of see how, like, things overlap, it gives you, like, a deeper appreciation of, like, everything. Like, you know, like, you can see, like, how, they may be doing different things or, like, telling different stories, but, like, there's, like, similar, like, ways of getting at it, or, like, just similarities in the approach. Like, I saw this clip where, like, Vince Staples was, like, comparing, like, Bob Dylan, like, a Bob Dylan song to, like, Lil Boosie's Devils. And it's, like, you know, like, and it's, like, and I think that stuff is, like, interesting, and, like, just being forced to, like, appreciate things outside of just, like, your immediate, like, you know, relatability to it. Like, that's, like, the fun of, like, engaging with this shit, I think.
Word. Like, I feel like most of these destinations aren't new anymore, and, like, the newness of it is the journey to get there, because, like, these are all ideas we've been grappling with in some way, shape, or form since, like, the dawn of time. Maybe not the dawn of time, but, like, at least the dawn of, like, recorded media and shit. So I'm just, you know, like, it's, that's, I spoke at a college yesterday. I spoke at the new school yesterday because I have a homie who, like, she works there, and she asked me to come speak to her kids. And I mentioned that, like, that shit's, like, really important to me. And then we ended the class by asking them, like, what type of media they consume and, like, what their favorite music media is. And just, like, there were some people who fucked with the written shit more. There were some people who just kind of fucked with, like, YouTube essayists. And one kid was honest and was like, to be real, bro, like, I just love to see a TikTok with, like, here's 10 things you should listen to. You know, like, everybody kind of came at it from a different angle and a different way. And I was like, it just made me happy that people want to know and explore this stuff, but everybody once again just kind of comes at it from a different way, from a different angle and a different perspective. And, like, some people want to think about it, some people just want to vibe, and, like, both of those things are fine as long as you're at least, like, engaging with the shit in a way that's not fucked up. I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, like,
yeah,
nah, I think about that with the internet all the time. Like, I feel like it's, like, easier now than ever to have, like, just a personalized, like, experience with, like, media or thing. Like, you can literally just see stuff that, like, you want to engage with, right? And, like, it's how, like, some people are, like even back to Cardi, like, he has, like, he's, you know, doing MSG, and then there's still a large portion of people like, how do you listen to that? You know,
like yo, that's crazy. Because I played my girl OBM Poppy or whatever the fuck the song is called, the one that, like, everybody hates. Yeah, yeah, or something. Yeah. Like, I played like it came up in a TikTok, like, and I was watching a TikTok, and Desiree was like, what the fuck is that? I was like it's new Playboi Carti. And Des like, that's noise, this is not music, like, what the fuck are you on some just, like, and Desiree says that about a lot of the shit I listen to, which is hilarious. But, like, you know, it's all a beauty is in the eye of the beholder thing. It's, yeah, like, it's just every once in a while I get reminded that, like, yeah, I like some really chaotic, fucked up shit. But it's weird because, like, it's Cardi, and, like, he's like, dominating the entire Billboard top 10 right now. Like, his shit is extremely popular. Like, there's no, this isn't, like, niche fucking, like, six people like this shit. Like, this is, like, the stuff that is, like, driving culture right now. So it's, like, interesting to see stuff like that. Like I think about what, like, a 42-year-old soccer mom would say or think when they hear, like, charge them hoes a fee just to pick a song. Or like, back rooms or something. You know, like, I can't imagine, like, taking your kid to soccer practice and like, opening up the goddamn, I'm blanking on car names, the minivan, and you're just like, oh, yeah, like, we're blasting fucking fine shit. Which, like, actually, I could see that.
But, maybe fine shit, but, like, you know, like, yeah, Crank or something.
Yeah, or, like, Stop Breathing. Like, I can't imagine a soccer mom pulling up to soccer practice or like the art camp and just like, yeah, no, let's listen to Stop Breathing, Mom. Like, but these are the conversations that people be having in cars and with their families and their friends, and, like, it's just weird to see it get, like, this is like the album right now. So, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, I love it that, like, it's, I don't know, it's so cool. Like, cause I don't, like, I feel like coming up, at least, and I'm saying coming up, like, I've spent a large part of my, like, adolescence to adulthood, like, in the internet, but, like, I feel like before, like, everything was, like, super interneted out, like, there were, like, stars, like, you know, like, people that, like, you just, like, people that were, like, universally kind of agreed to be, like, good, yeah. Like, even if you didn't like them, there was, like, you know, like, Kendrick Lamar, for example, like, that, like, there's no denying, like, he's great and skilled and whatever. Like, I feel like now, like, we're, like, in a thing where, like, people can be, like, there's, like, streamers who are, like, doing, like, a million, like, crazy, insane numbers, and you probably never even seen them or heard of them, you know? Like, yeah, I don't know anything about Pokimane, you know, like, I just see the name every now and then. Yeah. Like, but, like, that person's, like, killing shit on a certain, like, sector of the internet, and, like, really, like, in, like, people are locked in with this person for real, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's cool to see that get bigger and bigger, like to the Cardi thing is like,
right?
How big can the niche really like expand to?
Right, and you know, like some people just never have to leave that niche. I mean, like I don't know if it's this way anymore, but like there was a period of time where like YoungBoy like ran an entire corner of the internet, and I guess to an extent he still does, and people still fuck with him. But like the phenomenon's not as like special as it was like 2-3 years ago. Like there was a time when like everybody was like writing articles about like this kid doesn't get any press coverage, he never shows up on the Billboard charts, but like these 80 million teenagers run his shit up on YouTube, and it's like, you know, like I'm also always. Like, I mean, like, that's part of the reason why I love the corner that we all exist in. Because, like, people aren't doing, like, NBA YoungBoy numbers. But, like, we've, like, people, like you, me, and people like us have fostered, like, there's people listening to you in Europe that you've never met right now. Like, yeah. There's people listening. I guarantee you there's at least one person in, like, Copenhagen listening to this right now who's never... Like we're never gonna meet this person, but like, but like people care enough about what we have going on that they want to hear us talk about movies. And I just realized that I need to do an intro, so I'm gonna do that. What's cracking, everybody? Welcome. Nah, you're good, bro. These are the best intros where it's like a nice little cold drop in. But what's cracking, everybody? Welcome back to Real Notes. Obviously, we're already thick into some shit, which means that like I can't wait to see where this goes. But my name's Dylan Green. I'm Cinema Sai. Got a lot of names, do a lot of shit. Outside, inside, all sides, places. I was gonna plug a thing I'm doing on Friday, but you're not gonna hear this in time, so fuck it. If you make it there, I love you, you know what it is. But we're not talking about me today. Today we're talking about somebody else that I'm so happy, so hyped to have in this corner. Somebody that I've been wanting to do something with for a while. I didn't know what form it would take, but I heard Valenta and I was like, nah, we need to talk about this, you know? And then I heard, how do I want to say this? You're from the Bronx, dope ass fucking rapper from the Bronx. He's the same nigga he is under his breath as he is everywhere else. You know, like this is one of the realest fucking dudes I know. Goddamn Hester Valentine's here. welcome to my corner of the internet, son. How you feeling?
I appreciate it. I'm really happy to be here. Nah, thank you for having me on.
I literally ran through all your projects like within the last like 3 hours. Like I just mainlined. Oh, shit,
thank you.
I mainlined like four of them. Maybe not all of them, but I mainlined like four of them. So I'm just like I heard that and I was like, that's crazy. Like we need
that's to put more that in. Being a consecutive amount of time that I would listen to personally.
Hey, man, this is what we do over here. Also, before we get into the formal shit, I don't remember the last time this happened, but you're the first person in a while who's like pressed me over an article in person, and that made me laugh a ton. So I appreciate you doing that and keeping me on my toes about
Do we want to tell them which one it was?
Yeah, no. It was it was over my review of Tweaker, which I thought I might have been more negative about, but I guess I wasn't. But you just saw me and you were just like, oh, you kind of went a little easy on LiAngelo, and I was like, oh, I didn't mean to.
And then since then, this nigga has been doing the worst rap performances you could ever see.
Oh my god, son.
Like, this was pre Rolling Loud, pre NBA All-Star halftime,
Yeah. That Rolling Loud shit was so bad.
like.
Cause when I wrote what I wrote, it was just funny to think that I don't even know how old he is, but just thinking like this guy's been listening to like hella Saint Lunatics, hella fucking Boosie, like hella like vintage fucking Boosie and like Bone Thugs. And I'm just like, that was funny to me because like that's just what that sounded like, and I thought it was like kind of dumb. And then like I wrote that before the Def Jam thing happened. I wrote that before the Rolling Loud shit happened, and I'm just
He blew
like,
up like right after.
it was like, what have I done? It was all me. No, it wasn't all me.
You
But
coordinated him.
so that was just funny. That was at the Not Really album release. Shout out, shout out. Shout out to fucking Mike. That was a really great night, and that was
That was,
stupid and
yeah.
silly and funny. But what's up? But yeah, nah. Like, thank you for being here. I'm excited. Just considering what the music's been like, and just talking to you outside and around. Like, I can't wait to see what's going on inside that brain. So I'm gonna ask you the first question I ask everybody who comes on here, which is, what was the last movie or TV show you watched that you had a strong opinion about?
Ooh. Okay, well, the last movie that I watched, I just rewatched Donnie Darko a couple of
Oh,
days back.
wow. Okay.
It was playing at a theater, and I went to go see it with my girlfriend. And I really dug it. You ever seen the director's cut of Donnie Darko?
If I have, it's been at least a decade. Whatever version I watched in my homie Steve's basement is the version of that movie I've seen, because I only saw it one time. Shout out to Steve.
Got it. Yeah, this is my second time seeing it, and it's the theatrical cut, and like it's way less focused on like the sci-fi stuff, which I was like, I don't really this it, like the sci-fi stuff was like cool, but like I was like really interested in like just like Donnie is like this like weird kid and like this American suburbia, like, and he's like trying to fit in, and like he just kind of can't, and he's like struggling to cope with it. Apparently, like, the director's cut like is like way more into like the sci-fi, like he's like a living receiver and there's like a parallel universe and all this other shit, and I was like,
So then that's the version I definitely watched, because
oh my
like
God.
I remember being caught up in all of that, and just like, of course, the movie ends with the plane crash and him doing like the time travel kind of. It's a weird fucking movie. Anybody who's seen Donnie Darko knows that shit is weird as hell. But yeah. Tell me how the theatrical cut hit you versus the directorial cut. I'm so curious.
Like I've never seen the director's cut. Like I just like could have read about it because like I heard that it was like had more exposition about like the sci-fi elements, and I'm just like, and I was like, oh, I gotta see this because it feels like a different movie from what I was like reading. Like because the theatrical cut is like the sci-fi stuff is like way more ambiguous. It's like it's definitely more like it's more focused on like again like Donnie being this like kind of like weird kid with these like kind of mental health issues, and he's trying to like cope with it, and he's like trying to like navigate it, and like there's really isn't like the infrastructure to like deal with like people like him, like in this like you know kind of samey suburban town, like there's like this woman like who's like the teacher, and she's like trying to like divide feelings into like love and fear, you know, like shit like that, and like and he's like arguing like there's a full range of emotions, and, you know, it was, I don't know, like that stuff was like the interesting part to me, like the bunny shit, like I was like that's cool, like it's like freaky, like I liked it as like a weird like backdrop to keep us tethered to like that aspect of the story, but like the director's cut seems like it's like way more sci-fi, like way less about like Donnie as a person and more about like this living receiver shit, and I was like I couldn't have cared less about that, like I don't know.
And you're like, I'm thinking about it, and like the version I saw was definitely more like, it definitely focused more on him being this like moment in time and them trying to prevent the or like not prevent the plane crash, but like kind of lead up to the point where it's just like, oh, it's over and everyone's gonna die. They're in the house. Like, see, okay, like I'm like, things are getting mashed up in my head. I gotta rewatch Donnie Darko. It's been too many years, but
It's
like,
definitely solid. Like it's a good watch.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm like I had just been thinking about it generally, because like the see, like, this is why I need to rewatch it. The one scene I remember is when him and his sister, when him and his sister are having the argument at the dinner table, and she just tells him to like go suck a fuck, and he's just like, how does one exactly suck a fuck? Like that was like one of the first examples of like that type of just like watching siblings argue at dinner I'd ever seen in a movie, and I guess it just like imprinted itself on me. I had to have been like a teenager. Like I couldn't have been older than like 15, 16 watching that shit, but like I don't know why that imprinted on my brain. I'm just like, well, how exactly does one suck a fuck? Like that shit kills me every time.
I do love a good like siblings arguing scene. Like the one in The Incredibles is fun. Like
Yeah, nah, that's because that one's them at the table, right?
Yeah, and I think they all like kind of use their power in some fashion to kind of mess with each other.
Yeah, no, you know, and then the mom has to, and then Elastigirl has to grab him with her arm. She like lassos him and say, "Stop it! Shut the fuck up!" Like being an older brother and having a slightly younger sister, like we've been through many of those ourselves. So you know, I just like I see it and just immediately glomp onto it. But I'm gonna rewatch Donnie Darko. I'm gonna run it back. It's been, like I said, it's been a long ass time. So
Yeah, I
I'm
hadn't
ready.
seen it since high school, like before this. Like,
Where'd you see it? What theater was playing it?
I was out in Virginia, so I was like this like small like I think I forget the name of it, Violet Crown Theater or some shit like that. It's like some
Oh,
like small independent joint,
that's
like
cool as hell.
they do like a little classic joint every week or something like that.
Yeah, no, on like some film forum shit. That's tight. I like that. That's cool as hell. I'm trying, but before we move on, I'm trying to remember what the last thing. What was the last movie I saw? Oh yeah, I saw Opus. I saw it
Oh,
yesterday.
I saw you talking about that. You kind of your review, like the short like Instagram thing you did, kind of made me want to watch it. Like, I just like I was not interested into it, like, until I saw that. Because like, was it like a fun mess, or like was it like?
So how do I even put this? It was fun, but like I don't know that I consider it like good. It's like, for anybody who doesn't know, I didn't really know what it was about going in outside of like the general premise, but like it's about this journalist who works at this publication. She and her like editor get invited to go out to the like a compound in Wyoming owned by this big pop star who's like about to put out his first album in like 30 years or some shit. He's played by John Malkovich. The journalist is Iowa Debris from Bottoms and, you know, everywhere. Io is everywhere. She's amazing. But like, you know, it goes from just like, oh, this is a riff on the Kanye Wyoming sessions, to like, oh, now it's a horror movie on some weird shit. But like, it reminded you ever see The Menu?
No, I haven't seen many.
So like, I'm not gonna explain what The Menu's about. I like The Menu. I think it's a really cool movie. But it reminded me of like The Menu in the sense that it's very much a movie about the relationship between artist, critic, and consumer. Except Opus is more about the relationship between the artist and the critic. And it seems to me like Opus doesn't like either artists or critics. Like it was one of those where it's like I don't like the movie wants to tell me something, but I don't know what the movie's trying to tell me. I don't want to spoil it because I think it's worth a watch. Like on some like don't pay to go see it, but like go
Was
like
it
find
streaming
it.
or something? Like,
Yeah, find it on streaming. If a homie buys you a ticket, go with them. One thing that really caught me, it was written and directed by a writer who works at GQ named Mark Anthony Green. He did the when Andre put out the flute album, was that last year? Yeah, it was last year. When he put the ambient album out, he's the guy who interviewed Andre for GQ. And I was like, do you like your job, bro? Like I can't tell. Like I couldn't tell if he enjoys what he does, or he clearly has complicated feelings about that relationship, but they just didn't come through. It very much felt like a this is my first movie. Let me just take a stab at some idea I jotted down while I was waiting for my like 12 o'clock interview to show up. Like in I don't want that to sound fucked up, but That's really the impression I got.
For what it's worth, making movies are really is tough. You know, like
it's hard.
It's like it's very easy for like you to have a really good idea and it to come out feeling like that still, you know, like so like I don't think you sounded mean there. That
okay. Yeah, you know, I don't like it's definitely not like go attack this movie. It sucks. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. But like very much like a this is your first movie and you need to figure out how to like make a movie, if that makes sense. But once again, like you said, making movies is hard. Making music is hard. We all got to give each other grace. But you got paid X amount of money. Like, where's my writer director shit? Like if they're giving Condé Nast journalists like access to the director's chair, like I'm an alum. I earn my stripes. Like when can I make my shit? Somebody give me my money, fire. Please.
I'd be an extra in that, you know.
Damn. Yeah, no.
In the diner eating toast, you know.
I'm gonna keep that in mind. So I don't have any ideas right now, but like if somebody were to throw money at me, I'd think of an idea in like 2 weeks. Trust me.
It's like that that Tom Green movie.
Freddy got fingered. Oh my god, son. Wow. I haven't the first two times I ever saw Tom Green. The first time I saw Tom Green, you ever see Charlie's Angels? The one with Cameron Diaz and Drew Barrymore?
Like briefly, like when I was like a child, like nothing I remember.
Like he's in that. He's Drew Barrymore's love interest in that movie. That's one of my favorite movies. Like I don't want people on here to think I'm like artsy snob man. Like that's one of like that Charlie's Angels movie is one of my favorite movies of all time. I watch it at least once or twice a year. Like there's a scene at the beginning where like LL Cool J's in it, and like but like it's Drew Barrymore disguised as LL Cool J, like. He's on the plane. He's in a full dashiki with the headdress and everything. And he's like trying to get this assassin or whatever. And they wind up going off the plane. They fight in midair. They parachute down to a boat. And the guy calls like the guy who got captured or whatever. He's like, "Oh, you crazy bastard. What the fuck did you do?" And he takes a mouthpiece out and then you just hear Drew Barrymore's voice and she's just like, "I think you mean crazy bitch." And then she like takes the LL Cool J face off and it's just like that's cinema, son. Like, what do you mean?
That's fire.
That movie is crazy. It's hard to find on streaming, but like if you can find it on the internet, it's just
that
like
is hilarious.
It's such a specific brand of like silly, over the top, early 2000s action comedy racism on like they're terrible to Asian people, they're terrible to Black people, but like the shit slaps. It's a crazy movie.
If I had a streaming service, like. That would like, you know how like they have like the little like banners, like genre titles for like the little. I'd have one that was like, "It Was a Different Time." That'd be the name of it.
Easy, bro. Yeah, no, I can't tell you how many of my favorite movies are just things that I go back and watch, and I'm like, "Look, you know what's crazy? I was just talking to my sister about Tropic Thunder." 2 weeks ago, because like that's a movie I loved when it came out and it's really funny, but try to get Robert Downey Jr. in blackface in 2025 and like he won an Oscar for that shit too. Like I get what they were trying to do. I get the point they were trying to make. It was an interesting point to make. I'm gonna give him that, but like I don't need Ben Stiller telling Robert Downey Jr. like, "Yeah, I'm gonna need you to go Sambo up in the back room, buddy." Like, who made that call? Like, I don't know. It weird. Once again, it was a different time. Like, that's you know.
Yeah, I have complicated feelings with that, the Tropic Thunder one, because I like you, I get like what they're going for, and I do think like it was funny, like, but like. I don't know if that makes it justifiable. Like, just because it was like, just because it's funny doesn't mean it should happen. I don't like. That's my conflict with it. Is like, I guess it was audacious. You know, I don't know.
Like the way I see it, it's a difference between like Spike Lee making Bamboozled. You ever see Bamboozled before?
Never seen it, but I've seen like the posters and stuff.
Go watch Bamboozled. It's gonna make you depressed, but it's worth the watch. But like, it's a difference between Spike Lee wanting to make a movie like Bamboozled and a person like Ben Stiller wanting to do what he did with Downey and Tropic Thunder. That's a whole other conversation. Might take another like 45 minutes. I wanna bring the spotlight back to you. So tell me,
we're here.
What's the first movie experience you can remember having? I gotta ask that again. What's the first movie experience you can remember having? It could be at the theater. It could be at your cousin's house. Like, first thing that comes to mind for you.
My first theater experience.
Or it could be a non-theater experience. Like, whichever one comes to mind first.
I remember seeing The Hangover in the theater, like, with my mom. Wow. Like, 9 years old, probably.
Speaking of, it was a different time.
Yeah, it was a different time. Jesus. I'm, like, afraid to rewatch that one. I remember also seeing The Dark Knight as a kid in the theater.
How old were you when you saw The Dark Knight?
I would have been, like, 8, probably.
Wow. Okay.
Like, okay. So, yeah, those are, like, my first, like, two big, like, theater. Like, I remember seeing like 21 Jump Street. Like, that was another one. I don't know what that's a big time. That's probably like a 2 year jump, but 21 Jump Street, that's like the first one. Like, I remember like having like a lot of fun in the theater. Like, the other ones I remember just kind of being there and like, you know, well, no, Hangover had a lot of fun, but yeah. Dark Knight, I was like there and I think I probably fell asleep. but I was like, I enjoyed going to the theater. I enjoyed getting the popcorn. It was always like a fun like thing to do. Like, I didn't do it like often with my mom, right? But, like, when I did, it was cool.
Yeah, no, like those experiences are so precious. And like with movies like I remember when I saw 21 Jump Street in the theater. Well, actually, before we even get to that, I remember when I saw The Dark Knight in theaters, because I saw it at the spot. There was like a local movie theater in the town I grew up in. I think I've told this story on here before, so I'm not going to stretch it too far. But long story short, me and the homies pulled up and we watched the movie, and somebody brought their like infant, like legit screaming baby into this theater to watch. Like, the baby started howling at the scene when Joker put the pencil through Michael Clark Duncan. What's Black Dynamite?
Michael Jai White?
Michael Jai White. There we go. Yeah, no, like the baby started howling at the scene when Michael Jai White got the pencil in the eye, and like the baby was just like crying the whole time. That's all I remember from that experience. Outside of like the movie itself, it's just like the baby was just screaming. I'm like, yo, like why is your, like, you were 8. Like, that's like, I'm sure you were not like screaming and crying the whole time, but like, why are you bringing your 2-year-old to like the Batman crime thriller movie?
I'd be feeling so bad for those parents, because like, on one hand, it's like, it's so fucking obnoxious. It's like, yeah, come on, like, you know, yeah. But then it's also like, they probably want to see the movie, and I don't know if they got a place, like, I don't know if they got somewhere that can keep the kids and shit. So it's like, they're just probably hoping too, like, please don't cry, please don't cry, please don't cry. And it's like, and then Joker's, because who would have guessed that, you know, Joker's going to put a pencil through someone's fucking face, you know? Like, yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that specifically. You know, like,
right. But. but it was that, and then I think I was in college when 21 Jump Street came out, and those movies are, I haven't watched either of them in a long time, but I know I'm not going to go back and be, like, flummoxed by how crazy, like, inappropriate they were. Like, they were always cool, and I imagine they're still going to be cool. I mean, like, outside of, like, the propaganda, but, like, fuck it. That shit is everywhere. As long as you know, I don't know, complicated things. But those movies are great. I had a lot of fun with the 21 Jump Street movies back when like, Jonah Hill was funny. And back when we were first learning that Channing Tatum was funny. Like, that was, I think, like, the coolest part of those movies was Channing Tatum going from, like, the step-up kid to like, oh, he can like act and is funny too. Like, it was a really cool moment to see him lean into that shit.
Yeah, like, that was weird. Did you ever see that movie where he's like a street fighter?
Which one?
I think it's called Fighting.
No, but I saw trailers for that shit. I just never went to go see it.
That's another one that I saw in the theater.
Tell me about that experience. I want to know how that went.
Even as a child, I was like, this is dog shit.
Yo, because I remember seeing the trailers and it was clearly aiming for like, it was aiming for the type of area of something like you ever seen Never Back Down, which is like another fighting type movie?
Yeah, I think so. I might have.
It was like that. And then I think they were still trying to coast off of him being the step up kid. So it was giving me like, You Got Served energy a little bit too. Like they were like trying to lean into like the teenage heartthrob danciness of it, but it was also a fighting movie. I never saw it, so I can't speak on it.
Yeah, it's exact. Nah, you got it right pretty much. It's like he's still kind of like, you know, like, cause I think he has like a romantic, like that's all I can remember. Like it was like fighting and kissing. That's like, as a child, like those are my like two like associative like actions with the movie. Wow. Like he was like kissing someone and had to like also like fight people. And I was like, this is dumb. Why is he like punching people on camera?
My fault. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to shout out the Real Notes Patreon one time. For as little as $5 a month, you get exclusive goodies like video of every interview, 2-day early access to every interview, an invite to the Real Notes Discord server, exclusive access to the Real Talk Movie Night Archive, and early presale links for all live events. If you want to give a little more, you get other exclusives like retro 60-second movie reviews and monthly 90-minute workshops with me, where we can discuss whatever creative questions or projects you might have going on. Head over to patreon.com/realnotes, that's R-E-E-L-N-O-T-E-S, to join right now. I repeat, all videos will only be available on the Patreon. Thanks for listening, shout out to my patrons, now let's get back to talking.
Oh, like, what is happening? And he would just wear a hoodie. That was his, like, his getup. It was just a fucking gray hoodie or something like that.
Right. And then that guy went and made 21 Jump Street, he made Magic Mike, and he made Foxcatcher. Like, the range and just those three. You ever see Foxcatcher?
Yeah. Foxcatcher.
I love Foxcatcher.
Speaking of range, Carell is great in that, too.
Yeah. Nah, like, that was, like, the... He had done that Dan in Real Life movie that I also thought was terrible, but like that was like that was where I was like, oh yeah, this guy can like act, like he can like really like lean into more than just the comedy, and not in like a, I mean he was fine in Little Miss Sunshine, but I don't know, like Foxcatcher was the one that was really like, this guy's different, like he can actually do cool shit. Anyway, 21 Jump Street. I'm gonna rewatch those too because it's been too long, and I always think of the clip where Channing Tatum finds out that Jonah Hill fucked Ice Cube's daughter, and he run like that's maybe the hardest I've ever laughed in a movie theater in my life. Like I almost fell out of my chair laughing.
Me
that
too,
shit was exactly. Hilarious, son.
I died in the theater. When I saw that in the theaters, because I saw both of them in theaters, that scene is so fucking funny. Like I love jokes like that, like that are like set up like way earlier in the movie, or earlier in the show. Like there's like a, I don't know if you saw Atlanta season 4.
Oh, of course I had.
There's a particular joke in the, I don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's in the Urn Therapy episode.
Oh yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
When I tell you, like, when we get to the punchline at the end, I did not stop laughing for like a good 5 minutes. Like, I like I love a good misdirect. Like that just like takes forever to build, and like, yeah, no, nah, that.
Yeah, and some people are just petty. That's the fucked up part. That's why that worked the way it did. Because just like he really held on to that for that long. Go watch Atlanta if you haven't watched Atlanta. Like I could talk about Atlanta all day. But as you got older and you start having more life experiences and refining your palate or whatever, I like to think of this as like a capital M movie. The first thing you remember seeing that really connected with you in like a emotional or artistic or spiritual sense, just something that was like more than just like a movie that you enjoyed to watch, but something that was like this is a film, cinema, whatever type shit?
That's a tough, like, I feel like I went through like several different like phases in appreciating films, I think. Like I think like maybe like Taxi Driver is probably like the first one that I saw and was like, oh, like movies can be like kind of like artful or something. You know, like it could be like something more than just like to entertain me. But like the first one, like as a like a teenager that like I was like, I'm really connecting with this movie, like, and like I remember Synecdoche, New York was like one where I was like, oh, like this is like I was like, I just want to peel through all of this. Like I want to sit here and like I was like listening to the soundtrack and shit. Like I was like, you know, I was really like getting into it. Like so I think that's probably like my first capital like M movie where like I was like considering all the details and
Yeah, that shit made me like, that movie had me questioning life. I don't know that I'd ever seen a movie that genuinely made me like question life before I saw that, but like I was like, yeah, like just I didn't stop thinking about it for 3 days after I saw it, and just like the ending, and that's just like, it's just like a master class, and just like watching this person get completely consumed by their craft. And like, that's also part of the reason why, as much as I would love it, I never want a MacArthur grant, because if I get one, that's just gonna like I'm like all I'm gonna want to do is just make this big concept play about like A. Marie's All I Have, and it would just consume my life more than it already has. But like, yeah, I don't know, like that was like Kaufman, Charlie Kaufman's, he's a special one. He's a pretty incredible and really ambitious and creative filmmaker who I'm like, I love all his stuff. I love everything he touches, and he has a lot of sons, but like that's like, nobody's ever gonna make a movie like that again. And I hope they don't, because nobody needs to be traumatized like that. But amazing movie. Amazing movie.
get like yeah I love that movie and I one of my favorite things about it is like it's so dense that like and I love things like that because it's really rewarding like I think you can watch it as like a drama you can watch it as a comedy you can watch it as a horror like it's like it's so expansive like it makes you feel so many different things and it's like very particular and like I it's easily one of my favorite movies. It's definitely like the first movie that I was like, wow, this, you know, it was that's definitely my capital M movie. If not that, then maybe like Mulholland Drive or something. Like the
Oh
Nohai
shit.
Bhonda scene, like that's one that I think about like to this day. That's like one of my favorite. Like it's so freaky. It's so like kind of spooky, but like weirdly emotional. I don't know, like Lynch, I have like I love watching Lynch's movies too because like they all kind of feel like really emotional to me even though like they have all this like strange imagery and like strange stuff going on like and like yeah the Nohai Bhonda scene that's one of my that's like that shit is fire like is because to me it like sums up the a lot of the movie like you know the film is an illusion and like I think about that when even when I'm creating my stuff like it's like just like it's real but not real you know and like that's like kind of the
Yeah.
fun tension of it
Yeah, and like, and you know, like Mulholland Drive in particular, like first off, I think that's maybe Lynch's best movie ever. Like I think that's a pretty safe one to be like, that's his masterwork. Even though to me they're all masterworks. He doesn't have bad movies. But like, man, the first time I saw Mulholland Drive and just like took it in, and then I went and did research, and you find out that like everybody goes up to Lynch and asks, or like gives him their interpretation, and he's and they're like, is the movie about this? He's like, yes, that's what the movie's about. But like he would always tell people he prefers people's interpretation of the movie versus his own. It's one of those where you could really like Schenectady, New York, you could interpret it 80 different ways. Like the movie could be a piece of performance art. It could be a commentary on Hollywood. It could really be like, it's made so well and written so intricately and ambiguously that it could just be about whatever the fuck you want it to be about. and not on like some pretentious, superficial, like, this is missing pieces and you have to add it in as a viewer type shit. But like, it's written to be interpreted however you want to interpret it. Like, that shit is incredible to me. Like, that, like, I was a head bust when I saw it for the first time in like the truest sense. Like, I've like, not to be dramatic, but that shit kind of changed my life in just like how I was like, wow, like, that's, you can do that. Like, that was one of my you can do that type shit. Like, wow. Yeah.
Same. Like, and I feel like with Lynch stuff too, is like, it's like, I still feel it. Like, it feels very personal. It feels like there's feeling to get. Like, I laugh at his movies. I feel like I'm scared. I'm invested in what's going on. You know what I mean? I'm moved and sad at, you know, certain points and stuff like that. Like, there's like certain surrealist stuff. Like, you ever seen that Aronofsky movie, Mother?
Oh yeah. Yeah,
like,
I've seen
that one. I was like totally cold on, because like I didn't feel like I could like connect to anything. Like, it was like weird images in my face and like, you know, strange things, but it felt like more cynical than like any kind of like genuine like care or emotion or anything like that.
And it felt so sterile. Like, you could tell Sung was going out of his way to like get a rise and a reaction out of people, and that's a really slippery slope, because I think some of Aronofsky's movies. Like, he's made some incredible movies that I, like, would put as some of the best I've ever seen, but Mother's not one of them. And it's just, like, and it's mostly because it just feels like he's trying too hard, and the message isn't nearly as clever as he thinks it is. And then on top of that, like, there's this, like, the two scenes that fuck me up so bad, I always just think about the scene where Jennifer Lawrence is just, like, getting the shit beat out of her, and it's, like, super realistic, and it's just, like, eight people just punching her in the face. And I watched that in the theater, and I'm just like, I can't remember the last time a movie made me so uncomfortable. I'm like, you're just doing this just to do it. Like, why are we watching this? Like, I'm not trying to watch this poor woman get brutalized. And then the bit with the baby, and they rip the baby apart. And I'm just like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, yeah. Like, not even, because I love intricate, gory, weird shit, but it's just like, once it just felt like he was trying so hard to be like, look at me brutalize this baby, and look, they're eating it, and look, she's the son, and he takes advantage. Like, just, I was just like, this is so stupid. Like, you're trying too hard. Like, I don't like this shit.
Yeah, it felt like didactic in a weird way, but the messages weren't like you said, weren't as clever and interesting to like justify like the nastiness of the imagery. Because it's like, okay, cool, we're killing the baby because it's like the body of Christ or whatever. I've been a while since I watched it, but like, it's like a whole God allegory. And it's like, cool, yeah. I got it. I didn't need to see, like, I don't need to see this to get it. Like, I right. got it when Javier Bardem looked in the camera and called himself the creator. Like, I right. caught it.
Like, right.
You can't do that and then still kill a baby. It's like.
Right. Like, you know, you got to pick one. Choose a side. Like, you remember you remember the Family Guy bit where Peter's talking about not liking The Godfather, and then he just goes like, it insists upon itself. That's one of the only movies I've ever seen that I would like legitimately think like, it insists upon itself. Like, it's just too high on its own supply. I'm not jacking it. It's just not doing it for me.
This may be a bit of a hot take. I have that feeling about Magnolia.
Okay, explain. I want to see where you're going with it, but as somebody who really fucks with Magnolia, why?
it felt like really like miserable and like long for, and I felt like I knew where the story was like going like pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And like, not that that's a bad thing, but it's like, now I feel like I'm just watching people be miserable until they get to the point we know we're going to get to, and it's like, I don't enjoy that. and then it gets kind of corny with like the singing, and I didn't really care for the raining frogs. I was like, it insists upon itself. You know, like, I didn't. I was like, I can't, because in Boogie Nights is like, I like the other like Paul Thomas Anderson stuff I've seen. Like, I like There Will Be Blood. I like Boogie Nights. Punch Drunk Love is like hilarious.
Yeah, Punch Drunk Love's amazing.
Magnolia is the only one where I was like, and I don't think it's like bad by any stretch. I just like, this is not like the movie everyone told me it was. Like,
Yeah, like I'm not gonna sit here and tell you that it's my favorite thing he's ever done. I like Magnolia. I like Boogie Nights and There Will Be Blood and Phantom Thread.
Oh yeah, I like that one too.
To me, his best movie's The Master. Like I've been a master truther since that shit came out like 13 years ago. Like I don't know if you've seen The Master, but if you
That's the
haven't,
one I
go.
like. Yeah, I've been meaning to like see the master.
That shit is up. Like that shit'll also depress the fuck out of you, but it's really good. Maybe the best Philip Seymour Hoffman performance ever, and like he's done a lot of great performances. So, but like even
Synecdoche,
like
New York.
it's almost it's maybe a little better than that. It's a different kind of role, obviously, but like it's not as ambitious. But I think it's just like he's just L. Ron Hubbard, but like going through a midlife crisis, and I don't know. Watch, I'm interested in your thoughts on The Master. Go watch that, because that's like an all-timer, like putting that on my shelf, want to own it forever type movie, you
I
know?
gotta check it out. I suspect it might be my favorite too, because it's like just by premise is the one that I'm most interested in out of the, like, I think I like started it and like stopped watching because I had to like go do something. I'm notorious for that. I'll start something and then leave and then just never come back to it. Like I've seen like the first 30 minutes of Primer, never finish the rest, you know, like I
I don't even know that I don't even know that I've seen Primer, funny enough. That's funny you say that. But oh, right. Let's do the same with music real quick. When did music become capital M music for you? Like not even in terms of wanting to make music, but just like listening to it, experiencing it, just like enjoying music. Like when did it go from did like was it ever passive for you? Like
I mean, when I was like a child, it was probably passive. Like, as I got older, I started like reconnecting with stuff that I remember hearing as a kid, like, oh, like Justin Timberlake shit. I was like, I used to hear that. Like I realized, oh yeah, I used to hear Through the Wire all the time, you know? Like, but the first time like I like consciously probably like it was like Capital M music for me, maybe Danny Brown Triple X or like Kendrick Lamar Section 80. Those are probably like the two like first like records I listened to in full, and I was like, oh, like I listened to an album, like this is like, you know, it's like you can do that. Like it felt like a big boy thing to do at 11, you know. It's like I feel like an adult
Oh
now.
man. Wow. Okay. So I mean like we all know we've all heard the Kendrick Section 80 story like a million times. Tell me about being 11 and listening to Danny Brown's Triple X. That's some different shit.
I thought it was like funny and like wild. Like I didn't have much of a taste for the second half. Like that's like the section of the album that like as I got older I was like, oh, like this is pretty fly. And like and even just like talking to like other people, like I learned more just about like other people's experiences, and I'm like, oh yeah, like the feels, house, abandoned house, feel like I'm now I know what that means, you know. Like as a kid I was like, what the fuck is like just saying shit in my ear, like you know? But yeah, like his like the outrageous sense of humor was always like you know, he said my dick looked like the strap on a satchel, hilarious, you know, like you know, like just like and it's like and I wasn't getting all the punchlines because even now as an adult now I'm going back and like oh I didn't even get that like sex bar like that like just certain shit is like funnier now like as an adult, but like as a kid I was like this is and the beats were super weird and like I didn't you know I didn't even realize how much I valued that as a kid until like later in life too where I was like oh yeah this was just like the freshest shit out like you know like nothing else sounded like that so yeah that was big for me.
I'm blanking on the name of the Quelle Chris is a beat. It was Monopoly. Like Monopoly is the song that turned me into a Danny Brown fan. Like and like not even because of the pussy smelling like Cool Ranch Doritos line. Like just like the way that beat moved and how he found the pocket in it and I don't know like that Die Like a Rock Star fucking Pac Blood. I and then like 30 just like yeah you like you can't most people can't 100% relate to just like the awful come down shit he's talking about on the second half, but like 30 is just I don't know that I can count on like two hands the amount of rappers I've heard rap that hard in my entire life. Like 30 sounds like he's gonna die as soon as he steps out the booth. Like somebody's like got a gun pointed at him while he's rapping that whole song. And just like, yeah, that song is amazing. Like I still like that's like a like play that at my funeral type song. Like,
Yeah,
please.
30 blew me away too when I
Yeah.
first heard it, because I was like, this is, I never heard something so like, like you said, passionate, like, and yeah, he sounds like he's about to die for real. Like, he's saying like
Yeah,
he's like he's not like living the raps. That shit is spooky, because like I think up until that point, like my hip hop diet was like just like kind of edgy shit, like I liked like Eminem, like. I liked M, like I'll admit, like when I was like a child, I had a little Hobson phase and stuff, like I quickly grew out, like once he started dissing Tyler, that's when I got into Tyler the Creator, and then I stopped associating all that Funk Volume shit, like I was like, and oh, looking back, that shit is so trash.
Oh my God, son.
I tried to listen like to Jaron Benton the other day, and I was like, I can't do this.
Yo,
My
I
bad if
just
he's listening to, I doubt he's listening to a Hester Valentine
Hey.
interview. I mean, it'd be cool if he was, but my fault, Jaren, but
Shout out, no shout out to Jaron Benton. I remember exactly where I was when I first saw the Schizo music video, son. Like, and it was because it like it was in like a YouTube recommended thing because I had heard the game's Martians versus Goblins, which is the first place I ever heard Tyler. And then like Schizo got recommended to me, and like the beat was kind of weird and his voice was kind of funny, and that kind of got me for like a second, but then I thought about it and was like, no, I'm not doing this shit. And then like I listened to I can maybe count. I think I've only listened. I think I've listened to less than. I've never listened to a whole Hobson album. I remember when he came out. I had a homie who was really into him. And I listened to a song, and even then, I was like, I had to have been 19, 20 years old. I was in college for sure, but like I was like, oh no, this is garbage. Like no, I was like, absolutely not. Like no. But yeah, I've never listened to a full album of his, and then like the songs I've heard, I went back and re-listened to Happy Ending for the first time
Oh my
in a decade, bro. Somebody, because
Jesus.
that video doesn't exist. He took
He
it
had to
off his
take, of
page,
course. Yeah.
but somebody else put it up, and I saw it was up, and I was like, let me do this. And just, like they let him do that. Somebody put money behind that video. He paid for that studio session, recorded it. It got mixed and mastered. It was sequenced on an album. They shot a video for it. He went on tour, maybe. I don't know if he toured that album because that was when he was catching heat for beating his ex-girlfriend and being a deadbeat dad. So
Oh
fuck him.
shit.
But
I
like,
keep him.
anyway, like, but yeah, no, because that whole album, apparently, I haven't listened to all of it, but I read a lot. Is like about him just being mad at the world for like his ex-girlfriend who lives in Australia suing him for being an abusive piece of shit. But
Oh, that's
anyway,
crazy.
fuck Hobson.
I
There's
mean,
never
fuck
been a
Austin.
time, yeah, there's never, but like I remember like seeing like I got like I saw like a YouTube performance, I saw somebody recorded a show, and like they and like he had like the contacts in and like brought people on stage. I'm like, I get why people like this, but I like that was a moment where I was like, this is so not for me. Like I'm very good off this shit. Like y'all got it. Please take that over there. But I get it. I get why people.
Yeah,
Wow.
it was a smooth like 5 months as like a 10-year-old where I was like fucking with
Hey
Hobson
man.
for real, and then
Yeah.
like I don't know, maybe I just like developed taste like over a summer or something. I don't know what happened, but like it's like no more of this bullshit.
No judgment, man. We like, taste has to start somewhere. You
Oh
develop
no,
it.
like I'm like,
Yeah.
look, I'll admit it. Like my first couple favorite rap, my favorite rappers used to be New Boys. Like I fucked with New Boys.
Let's
Like
go.
You know, I remember having a top five list. It was like New Boys was like second on that shit. The Jerk, they had a song with Tyga. I was like, this is heat. You know?
No, like I'm you know, like I there was a period of time Lil Romeo was my favorite rapper because I heard him rap over a Jackson 5 sample and I was like, oh, I'm the, you know, I had to have been like 9, 10 years old, like, oh, nobody's ever done that. Like, that's my dad's music. And you know, like,
Yeah.
you know, like,
I cherish those things. I think like I love like, cause like it's dope to me. Cause like I don't know, it's dope to me that there's like things for like kids to like really like latch onto and like get into like cause it's probably easier for me to get into like New Boys as a child than it would be for me to get into like insert random artists like Ka or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, and I think like shit like that should exist. Like, I can't wait to hear kids being like, yeah, you know, like my first rappers I liked were Ray Shremmer, you know? Like, that's so cool.
No, I agree. And like, even, and it's crazy because like being in, like I was in college like when the first Shrem album came out, and like that shit was like everybody loved it, you know, like No Flex Zone, No Type, like all that shit was like I go back and listen to that album sometimes, and it's like they got a classic. Like, that's a classic album. Like, I would put that up against, like, because like at that time that was like Ferg had just put out Trap Lord, the Migos were just starting to pop off, so like Versace and Hannah Montana and Fight Night were going crazy at that time, like on the Young Rich Niggas era, of course. Like, that was like around the time like Lil B was starting to peak a little bit. Like, though, you know, like that's like, I wasn't a kid at that time, but like I was like a late teenager, early adult, and like those, I go back to a lot of those records, and I'm like, these are like things that are kind of foundational to who I am now. But then there's stuff I was listening to at the time where I'm like, wow, I can't believe I was listening to that. Like, I'm happy to know what that is, so I can be like, this does not align with my taste anymore, and we can move on from this shit. But yeah, like it's all a part of the journey, you know?
Absolutely. And it's fun to look back like and laugh, you know, like
I liked Good Vibrations by Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch because I heard it in a movie trailer one time and was like, this is, you know, like I'm yeah, nah, no secrets held over here, bro. No secrets held over here, son. But like as you get older and you make it out of your Hobson face and you start wanting to make music, when did you, I mean, I know you started writing raps pretty young, but like when did you know that music was going to become more than just a hobby for you and that you like actually wanted to make it on some shit?
That I honestly I never wanted to be anything other than a rapper, to be honest with you. Like, from as long as I can remember, like, it was either rapper or like screenwriter. But screenwriter was like, but screenwriter was more because like I was like, I didn't think I'd have like the like I was like I don't know, I like if I can't rap, I'll do that. But like I always really wanted to rap. But I didn't get like the confidence to really pursue it until like my 20s. So like 2020 was probably when I like started like taking serious, like, all right, I'm gonna actually record things. And like I recorded stuff when I was like 13. Like I was like rapping and recording on Audacity and shit and like sending tracks to people. But like I stopped because I like lost confidence. But then 2020 is when I like was like, all right, I got nothing to lose, the world is ending. Like let's give it a shot.
When did you do your first freestyle over the schizo beat? I'm playing. I'm sorry. I'm playing. So like, I mean, like, yeah, like the pan, yeah, like the pandemic really like cracked open a lot of shit for a lot of people. I think like a lot of creative renaissances started around then. So like, what were you recording at that time that made you think like, oh yeah, like I could actually like do this and I want to put it out and let people hear it? Like, it's because of course, like it's a difference between making shit for yourself, but then just being like, this is good enough to share. Like, when did that happen?
I'm trying to remember, because like my journey in the beginning was a little tough. Like I was splitting, like I was started off to save money. I was splitting studio time with my mans, right? So we would book a 3 hour session and would go hour and a half each. But he's like, it's terrible with time. So we would show up to the sessions late. So our 3 hours, you know, more probably like 2 hours and 45 minutes, you know? And we had like two very different styles. Like I was like kind of more like backpackery type shit, and he like was like on some like Afrobeats type vibe, right? Or he was like doing that in like the A Boogie type style. And the engineers would like kind of fuck with that more because like we in the Bronx, and that's like how like the Bronx sounds.
Of
And like
course,
I would
yeah.
do my shit, and niggas would be like, "Oh, you doing that Ab Soul shit?" And I'm like, "I do not rap like Ab Soul. I love Ab Soul, but I do not rap like Ab Soul."
Right.
And so like I had like a little chip on my shoulder there, but like I was like, I like rapping. I think like I just had like a confidence and like, you know, like I think I write clever stuff every now and then. Like I want to keep doing this. Like I want to keep getting better. And I was like going with a friend, you know, like that makes it easier to suck in the beginning. Like when you, it's like a
Right,
little of a
yeah.
social thing. And then I partnered up with an engineer that I met through him, and him and I like clicked immediately. Like, you know, we would like talk, like me and other engineers, like, you know, these niggas watching UFC fights while I was recording, you know,
Right.
like this guy was like actually like paying attention when I was recording. Like I'd ask him like, what'd you think about this take? He would give me feedback on the take, like, you know, and like some of the style, I switched up the style a little bit. Like I did a little more simpler stuff, a little more fun stuff. And like that really, that's when I started getting the confidence, when I linked up with that engineer. That didn't happen until like probably like 6 months to a year in. Like, you know, like I start recording 2020, maybe towards the end of 2020, beginning 21, that's when I link up with the engineer. So like it was really a year of just sucking and people not fucking with what I was doing. And
Right.
then like when someone really did like kind of start fucking with it, that's what gave me the confidence to like keep going. But yeah, it's
Yeah.
just, yeah, it's just wanting to do it really.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure. Cause you know, like the earliest project of yours I was able to find. Yeah, no, the earliest one I was able to find was I Can't Cut Your Hair, which is 2023. But so you had already been recording for a couple years up to that point and were like in the thick of it. So listening to listening to I Can't Cut Your Hair and listening to Make Me, like those two projects are just so. One of the things I love about your music and what like really caught me about it at first, because the first time I ever heard you was at it was at some Wonderville show. Like I walked in while you were finishing a
I
set.
think it was Crusher Records.
I'm pretty sure.
Kill Von Guard and Place Called
Yeah.
Hell, I think, yeah.
That was it. Yeah. So like I walked in like as you were finishing your set. I caught like the last two songs and you're just like screaming. And it's just like dial tone interference. And like, I like you gotta be a really special type of rapper to be able to just like go in over like fuck a drumless loop. Like that's just like you rhyming over like ambient white noise. And that shit was so fire. I was like, who's that? You know, like you just like made an impression. And then like after we linked and connected and I started listening to your shit more, like you jump between being so direct and occasionally you'll get like a metaphor off, but most of the time you're just like so blunt. And it's like I never like you're not really making jokes, but it's funny and it makes me laugh because it like catches me off guard and it's just you just like this is the idea, this is what I'm trying to say, no beating around the bush. Like I forget what song it is, but there's just one where you're just like all my songs are about eating pussy and I'm just like this is the guy right here. Cuz like you come at everything you do in this like you can be direct about it, you can be sly about it, and I never know which one I'm going to get on either of those. I don't know which version of you I'm going to get from song to song. So like I'm so curious about your writing style and like how you kind of refined that and just figured out how to just like, cause like you really just be talking on these tracks sometimes. Like it's just like you're not even like in meter. You're just like talking, yeah. And that's dope to me. Like talk to me about refining your style and like on those two projects in particular. Cause I feel like those were like real. Yeah. Like listening to I Can't Cut Your Hair. I'm like, this person isn't like on a label right now. Like people aren't like knocking on your door to like get you to make like 50, 45s. Like, anyway, I'm sorry. Tell me, tell me.
I really
about
appreciate that.
That.
For I Can't Cut Your Hair specifically, like I feel like those like Outside House produced that record entirely. And she gave me like real dope beats. Like we did a bunch of songs. Like I kind of whittled it down to like what I thought was like the most potent records and put them out. And her beats like allow for like a lot of freedom, I feel like. Like I felt like I just like it allowed for that style you're talking about for me to just kind of come on and like talk my shit and like and say what I gotta say. And for me, like a lot of that record was like kind of about like struggles to communicate, struggling to like, you know, connect and stuff like that. So like that's why in some of the lyrics there's incredible bluntness, and then some of them it's like kind of pulled back. Like that's an intentional choice. I like when a verse can hit you with different feelings and like what's the word I'm looking for, like I don't know, every line shouldn't have the same feeling, if that makes sense. Like I think, yeah. Like it I like, you know, there being punchlines that hit you in the face. I like there being lines that like are a little more sly. I like there being like kind of wordplay that you might not catch until, you know, third, fourth listen. Like I think they all serve, you know, it's like a dinner plate. Like, you know, you're not gonna make a plate, you know, five steaks on it. You know, you're gonna steak, right. Fries, you know, vegetables or whatever. So like that's how I kind of approached the verses. Like I wanted to be interesting to hear. I wanted to be interesting to read. I wanted to be felt as well. Like I want to hit all those quadrants. So like I think that's kind of why they come off that way. Cause I'm trying to hit you in all the places your brain is connecting with the verse. If that makes sense.
It does. And like that all works the way it does, because like you also have like a crazy voice, like just like hearing you talk, like you're really on some like orator, like. Like I don't want to say you're like a preacher, because I feel like that's like super cliche, but like your voice grabs ears. Like it's an attention grabbing voice. Like you're not always yelling, but it's like very clear. Like the fact that you talk the way you do, it cuts through every single beat you're on. Like you could be rhyming over the most chaotic, like perfect example, LeBron meme from Make Me. Like to me, like that's like your Rosetta Stone. Like the stuff you're talking about, the way you're talking, the way you're talking it. And like that beat is just like, that shit sounds like it's melting. Like that shit sounds like battery acid going through my finger when I take the back off the remote that's been in the corner for 10 years and the batteries is it's like the battery acid's like caked and you're trying to get it off and it like still burns your fingers. Like that's what LeBron meme sounds like to me. And the fact that you communicate anything over something that's just like, it just sounds like static and you're just cutting through, like just boom, 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 boom. Like that to me is like, that's what makes you special. I heard that and was like, wow, like that's amazing. So
thank you, yeah. So much. That actually means a lot. That's awesome. That's, yeah. Like the sweetest thing I've heard all week. Thank you.
Oh man. Yeah. No, like I'm so serious. Like that's a, like that to me is like anybody who wants to know what you're about, like go listen to LeBron meme. Like that's the one that I think will, because like, and then another thing that I feel like started to percolate for you a bit more as you went further in, like I listened to Valenta and Hunan Slurp, which Hunan Slurp is out, not everywhere now, but it's on Bandcamp. The link will be in descriptions. Go buy it. It's great. But like, the thing that's cool about Hunan Slurp and Valenta is that those two projects are like, you get at the variety when it comes to like the beats in a way that feels a little more intentional than it did on the first two projects. Like Like they're like on Valenta in particular, there's at least two things that sound like surf gang beats to me. And there's like one that's like clearly a drill track. And it made me think like I need the Hester Valentine Harrison tape. Like fuck the we love Mike. Fuck Mike and Tony Seltzer's pinball. I need the Hester Valentine and Harrison tape. Like I'm ready. I'm ready to hear you go in the way you go in on anything over that. But anyway, I'm rambling.
I'd love that too.
Yeah, nah, like I could see it, but yeah, like I reached out. I mean, like we already know each other, but like I'd reached out to you when Valenta came out because like even just thinking about that project, it's just like wow, what an experience. Like what am I listening to? Tell me about how Valenta came together and what the deal is, because that shit is crazy.
So, last year, I'd been like kind of playing around with like how I release music. I don't know. I like to drop things randomly. I like to, put things out in demo form for people to listen to. Like, because like I don't know. For me, experience is really important, and like I like just creating experiences. And sometimes that means giving people unfinished stuff and letting them be a part of the process of how like style changes and grows and stuff. So I've been doing that, and a label out in the UK reached out to me to try to like get the songs together and put out a compilation, and that's how Valenta came about. We took some of the best joints that I put out over like the little course of me dropping things out every Friday. I think
Yeah.
it was every Friday. I was dropping stuff every Friday, and we just took the best and made a compilation of just like the most potent records, and that's what Valenta
Right.
became.
Who produced all those songs? Was it all one person or just like a grab bag of shit?
Grab bag of stuff, different producers, some stuff I found on YouTube, stuff people sent to me. I just like rapping. I try to rap on as much stuff as I can.
Yeah.
And yeah, so anywhere I can find a beat, I'll put words to it if I can.
Yeah, so I mean like so let me ask in that case. I want to ask about three of these songs. Where did Lazarus come from? Where did I or four? Lazarus, I Love Pink, Brinks Truck, and I don't give a fuck if you paint your nails, you're still a misogynist. Like those are the four that stick out to me right now.
Lazarus, like where the beats came from, or like how the
Yeah.
songs came about.
Or either or both. Fuck it, both.
So Lazarus, that beat came from YouTube, and the song was it was written because I was like having conversations with my cousin about like I forget what we were talking about, but it was just based on some conversations we were having about like just our lives and our just like our different perspectives and shit like that. And something that like kind of made me sad in the conversation was like how he was like kind of explaining to me how like he's got to do certain things because like just like I'm trying to say what I was like. I mean, he was talking about like some criminal
Yeah.
shit. And he was like explaining to me how like things have to be handled a certain way, and I was like the sadness to me was like in those contexts, yes, that makes sense to handle things that way, but when you bleed it into like it's just a shame because it's like such a specific context, you really can't navigate the rest of the world like beating people up, and you just won't get anywhere, you know what I mean? Like, and but like to survive in like these like to survive in like a criminal world, to survive in like even if you're not in the criminal world, just like in like in certain like urban areas, like just the idea of like masculinity being this like strong like armor thing, like it's like advantageous in some ways for people to like to have this armor to like to just be strong or whatever. And I don't know, so I was playing with that idea in my head, and the title Lazarus came because like he was talking about how like when you go to jail, like people just act like you died, you know? And then you come back out, you know, that's the Lazarus effect, you know?
The Lazarus pit. Yeah, totally.
And so, yeah, so it was just playing with those ideas. That's where the Bobby Shmurda sample came from, because dude's on probation talking about he's 3-0, whatever. And it's just to prove a point, because he has to keep the exterior, you know? He's willing to throw his freedom away just to prove the point. So it's kind of just playing with all those ideas, and that's where that shit came from. I forget, I Love Pink, that came from Outside House. She gave me that beat. The writing of that song, that, like, you know, that was just me venting, you know, venting about weird shit I see in the city, venting about, you know, and just also telling jokes. You know, like, I like to do both, you know, vent and tell jokes at the same time. Just, to me, that's, like, a just real free track. Like, I was able to kind of, I like that track because, like, I'm just getting, like, all of me out there, you know? Like, the silly parts, the sad parts, the nervous parts. Like, I think it's all, like, represented there. I Don't Care If You Paint Your Nails, You're Still a Misogynist. That beat also came from YouTube. That was me, like, having fun, trying to see what I could do with my vocals, like, you know, just doing some fly shit. Like, no cool story there, you know, just trying to be fly. I forget what the fourth track was. I don't remember.
I said it was Brink's Truck, and Brink's Truck. I have a story to tell about it before you explain. You go first, and then and then I'll tell the story.
I'll be quick. The beat came from YouTube, and that was another one where I was like, I'm a dope rapper. I'm just be dope on this beat. What's your story?
Yo, so earlier today, I sent that project over to my friend, my friend and my colleague over at Hearing Things, Julianne. I love you, Julianne, if you're listening. And she's been dating a member of Das Racist for a very long time. And it's Dap. Shout out to Dap. And like, I sent her that album because I was just listening to it for today, and I was like, send this to Dap. He'd probably fuck with this or whatever. And then I listened to that song, and then I heard you say, like, I've been that nigga since Das Racist. And I was like, oh shit. I told them, like, oh shit, there's explicit Das Racist reference on track 7. I didn't send that for this reason, but funny as hell to do that. Like, that happened. And while she's listening to it, she apparently said that Dap was, like, very happy and then, like, squealed and was like, wow, we're old on some shit. So that was, like, that just happened, like, 4 hours ago.
Oh, that's sick.
That just made me laugh. So, I mean, like, one of the members of Das Racist has heard that song. I just wanted to let you know that.
So fucking cool. That is actually so cool. I think, like, I was just in, I was doing the Caltrops interview, and I was, like, just talking about how, like, I wanted to rap like Heems. He was, like, one of the first rappers I wanted to, like, rap like. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. Yeah, nah. Wow, that's so fucking cool. I was just telling my girl about Das Racist the other day. I was like, yo, baby, you ever seen, like, she was like, she's ignoring me. I think I put on the Pizza Hut Taco Bell shit, to be fair.
Oh, of course.
But then I put on a different song. I was like, nah, listen to this shit though. Like, and it was going crazy. I want to say it was Relax Man. So I forget the name. I'm bad with titles. Anyhow, you made me really excited, and I'm like talking super fast. Thank you.
Oh, of course. Like, it's just funny how that happened. Like, I had heard that song so many times, and I never registered the Das Racist line, and I was like, oh, I have to bring. And it just worked out that way. And yeah, like it's just funny how, like, I don't know, like Valenta to me, like, as much as I like Hunan Slurp, which I want to touch on before we wrap this up, like Valenta to me is like this is like prime Hester Valentine type shit. Like, this is like, of all the things you've put out, like, that's the one I keep coming back to the most, like, just in terms of like you're really just talking your shit the whole record over, like, these just like these crazy beats, and like crazy varied too. Like, you're not just like one thing that I always want people to take stock of the fact that like there's a lot of people who assume that because you're an indie rapper, I cover this shit and like we run with all these people that like all we're listening to is like Backwoods and like old Def Jux shit and that's it. Like everything else sucks, whatever. Like seeing you attack the stuff that's all over this project and how varied it is. I don't know. Like I know somewhere somebody's having a heart attack over you rapping over like a Surf Gang beat, or like somebody like you, quote unquote, rapping over a Surf Gang beat, or you know, like it would be like if fucking, it would be like if Woods got an Evil Gianni beat. Like people wouldn't know how to take that. And I don't know, like, you're clearly, like, we've talked about this, but, like, you're clearly somebody who, like, listens to every kind of music, every kind of rap music specifically. And I just appreciate you breaking down that paradigm. And I think that might be part of the reason why Valenta is, like, that project to me.
You know? Thank you, and I really appreciate that. And I'm happy that, like, there's other people who, like, engage with it in that way. Like, when I first started rapping, to me, like, I was, like, I wanted to resist labels and boxes. Like I didn't want to be like this kind of rapper, this type of, you know, because to me there's overlapping people's tastes, there's overlaps in people's expressions, and to like, you know, put yourself in a box and limit yourself is like, I don't know, silly and disingenuous to me at least.
Agreed. Yeah, no, like it's yeah, like why limit yourself, or like not even limit yourself, like there's a difference between like knowing what you're capable of and wanting to do cool shit on your own terms, and just like you can stagnate that way. Not everybody does, but you can, and it's, you know, like you're just moving at your own pace, and that's dope, and I love that. And like how and then you get to Hunan Slurp, which is like even more of like a concentrated burst of like what Valenta was. Like it kind of feels like Valenta in miniature to me because of that. So like considering this is like quite a bit shorter, excuse me. And considering it is quite a bit shorter, like talk to me about how Hunan Slurp came to be, and like what this represents for you as like your first project of the year. And like, just like talk to me about like what this project is.
You know? For sure. Like I said earlier, like I like to experiment with how I release stuff and try to figure out like what feels good and what feels right. And like I think my primary way of like communicating with people is through music. So like, you know, like I'll be honest, like, you know, for a lot of the year I've been like kind of frustrated, you know, and just like and worried about things, you know, whether it's career, you know, just like politically, like, you know, it's just weird time, you know. Like, and
yeah, bro.
And like, you know, and sometimes I have thoughts where I'm like, you know, I want to make this music thing happen. I want to be the best rapper I could be. I want to, you know, have a career. And then sometimes like this, I feel even selfish feeling that way and even thinking about it. Like, you know, like there's this and this going on. Why do you even care about being the best rapper in the world? You know, like it's such a silly thing to. So I don't know. I think like, and that's kind of what compelled me to like kind of just like do this like quick drop, like record this thing, you know, not overthink it, not put too much like not effort, that's not the word, but like too much thought, like, you know, like, because like me, I'll obsess over takes, I'll you know, obsess over the writing of the words, like I'll rewrite a verse multiple. I was like, I just want to give what I'm feeling, give of myself in this moment, like, and release that. And yeah, like I don't know, like it feels cool to create things that like, what's the word, I'm trying to think of a non-pretentious way to say this, but like back to just wanting to create experiences, like sometimes I like to create things that like it's cool because it came out of nowhere, it's cool because like it has this particular feeling, like you only when you listen to Hunan Slurp, that's the only thing that's going to feel like Hunan Slurp, you know what I mean? Like whether that's good or bad, that's like up for you to feel, but like I want to force like introspection. I want you to like sit with it and be like, you know, I dislike it for this reason. Like I just don't like this experience. You know what I mean? But like it, like I wanted to create something where like you're not sitting there going like, oh, this bar wasn't that tight for this reason. Like you can't analyze the craft of it. It's just you gotta feel it. You know what I mean? And by just kind of not overthinking it, I think I put people like in that space. And like that's what I try to do with every project. Like I can't cut your hair because it's so abrasive. I think it puts you in that in that space. Like you kind of have to either to I like that record because you're either on board with it or you're not. Like, and I like stuff like that. Like Hoonan Slurp, like you're either gonna be on board with it or you're not. Like, you're either gonna be like, this is like kind of weird, fun, like little songs that kind of this is like the attitude of it, and you dig it or you don't. And I like that, especially in a culture now where people are like ranking discographies and like making top stars and shit like that. Like something that forces you to just like experience it, like and not like compare it and rate it and all that other shit. So that's where that record comes from.
100%. Yeah, no, like just being able to offer up a perspective and be like, take it or leave it. Like, I don't really care. You know, and like you've said this so many times on record, but like you always talk about how like I don't care if people are listening, I don't care who listens. Like, I'm just here. Like, I've always gotten the impression that you're just like a I'm just doing this for me and everybody else is lucky enough to listen. Type impression, like almost like I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's the impression I get sometimes, which I think is cool, you know.
It's a balancing act. Like I think like I do respect people's time, and I respect like because like to me like in terms of like people's time, I'm in competition with like everything in the world. You know what I mean? Like I'm not in competition with rappers. I'm in competition with like watching films. Like I'm like there's people who be like, man, like I can imagine people send you music and like, man, I hope Dylan listens to it. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, Dylan's probably like watching movies, like, and that's like an important thing for you to do because that's even like directly tied into your work. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not even like a music like as a rapper, you think you're just competing with like. Oh, Tyler's dropping this week or whatever. I don't know. You know, like, but like people have lives. Like people could be doing their taxes instead of listening to your fucking record. You know what I mean? Like so it's like I respect people's time in that fashion, and that makes and that makes me want to commit to like doing good work. But like I also like I don't like I don't like want to adhere to people's like norms and conventions for how they consume shit either. You know, like I think there's like a there's a give and take like I just like it's not that I don't care if people listen, like I want people to listen, I want people to connect and engage, and like and that's why like there's records where I give like just like of myself in a personal way, because I think to receive that consideration you have to give it. That's why like I'm bold, because to receive that consideration you have to give something worth that consideration, you know what I mean? But like you know it's more like conventions I reject. It's more like you know like I think like I want to. It's kind of like the 454 Pink Sifu piece you're talking about. Like I relate to the idea of like the artist wanting to be seen in their totality. Like so I like it, you have to take all the contradictions. You got to take all of me that comes with it, and like that's like the fight every time I put something out. Like I want to be seen for all of it, for all the denseness, for all the complexity, for all the confusingness. Like you know, there's people who like the emotive stuff and don't like the sillier stuff, and to me it's all one. Like you can't untangle the two.
Right, 'cause like either way you're not making passive music. Like you're not listening to that shit. Like you're not listening to a song like We Was Locked In Tough, like, and you're not paying attention to it. It's not that type of song. Like, it's either gonna grab you or you're gonna think it's noise and you're gonna shut it off. It's just like one of those, you know? And you could say like not like how do I want to say this? Like you just don't make passive music. You make music that like you need to sit down and like really consider and like meet halfway. it's not something that's like, you don't make easy listening music. And a lot of people don't make easy listening music. And I appreciate people who don't make easy listening music because, you know, like you're challenging people, like you said, you're challenging conventions and you're challenging the way people think and consume and like the type of things a rapper can rap over. Like, not to say that like you're the first person to do this type of thing, but there's going to be somebody who's never heard you go in over like a garage beat before. There's going to be somebody who's never heard like this type of like industrial fucking like metallic clanging headache type music and be like, what's this? Like, that's the thing I always have to remind myself of as both a writer and a listener. Like, everything's new to somebody. Like, somebody's going to be engaging with this type of thing for the first time ever. And like, how would you describe this to somebody who just got off the musical boat, as it were? And sometimes you get taken off by the hand, and sometimes somebody stabs you with a fork and throws you into the fucking ocean and you got to figure out how to get on land. And like, that's the type of music you make. And that's great. I fuck with that. And I appreciate that you aren't scared to do that. So yeah.
Yeah. I have trust in the audience, and like, and I think, and that like, it's a dual, like, we share in, like, me and the audience, like, share in that. Like, mm-hmm. like, I have trust that they can meet me halfway, but then I also know that I have to work to be worth meeting halfway. Like, I have to present in a way where, like, it's worth your time. Because, like, right. especially now, like, but the, like, I feel like more than ever, like, people are, like, thirsty or hungry for, like, something, like, real. Like, there's just so much, like, fake, like, even, like, it's getting, like, even, like, with the AI, like, just, like, I don't know, it's just, I feel like there's just so much, like, fake shit, like, actual fake shit, like, just lies, yeah. like, how many times do you see, like, a video, and, like, the caption of the video just does not even really describe what happened in the video, you know, it's, like, just, like, my favorite YouTube videos, like, are, like, ones where, like, it's, like, Gilbert Arenas reveals the truth about LeBron's legacy. Like, that doesn't even mean anything, but like, right, it's like right. telling you the idea that this is true. Like, and like, and I think like, I respect people's like, I think like deep down, like people want authenticity. I think like for streaming numbers and shit like that, like selling like the idea of like idealism, like maybe better, but I think that people like connect with like truth, like, and, that might be harder for like people to get initially, but like when they do get it, that's like much more valuable than like
right.
the scent of the bakery, if that makes sense. Like, they want food, they don't want just the smell.
1,000%. Yeah, no. And like the fact that you're doing that and you're aware that you're doing that is everything. Damn. I feel like we could go for like another 2 hours. This has been so good. But to formally wrap this, Hester, as a former aspiring screenwriter, if your life was a movie, what would it be about?
It'd be about going to work, trying to make it on time every day. It'd be like Patterson. It'd be...
The Jim Jarmusch movie?
It'd be
crazy.
Like
Patterson. Wow.
Shit, yeah.
Wow, yeah, no, yeah, I was just thinking because, yeah, like, when I'm in my spot in Jersey, I'm, like, right near Patterson, so it's just, like, funny watching that and just being, like, he's, like, just the way Patterson came out in that movie was super interesting to me. But once again, a conversation for another time. But I love that. That's a great answer because, yeah, I love Jarmusch, so...
Me too. Stranger Than Paradise. That's another one of those capital M movies. I was like, this is...
Mm-hmm.
I was like, comedy can be like this? Fucking hilarious.
Right. Like that and Coffee and Cigarettes and like, of course, like Ghost Dog. Like who could ever forget Ghost Dog?
Jarmusch is the man.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, shout out to him. But yeah, shout out to you, Hester. Like, thank you so much. I knew this was going to be a cool one, but this was like... Yeah, I'm happy we got the time to just like sit and talk for a minute. This
true.
Was, Yeah,
thankfully man. The audio worked.
Yeah, no, and that was all me again. Like, it was my headphones were fucking up. But yeah, no, like I've been rocking with the music for a while, and it's really cool to see you starting to like slowly build something that's, I hope, gonna be really sustainable, and like people are gonna like the right people find you, and your time is coming in the best way. And
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No, man, of course. Yeah, like it's been, and also it's just like great seeing you out. Like, you're out a lot, and that's cool. It's always great to see you out and just like take in all this shit that we're involved in together. It's heartening on some real shit. Yeah. So yeah.
Word. No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. Like,
oh man. Like, yeah, like this is like been a long time coming, and I'm just happy we had an excuse to finally make it happen, you know?
For sure. For sure. I was not expecting the DM, so this is awesome.
Let's go, bro.
Thanks for listening. Shout out to y'all for making it this far. And shout out to all the Black people listening too, because y'all really impeccable. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend to come through next time. One.